Hi, friends. Welcome to Spilling the Beans podcast, where we spill the beans on all things intuitive eating, health at every size, body acceptance, and gentle nutrition. I'm your host and registered dietitian, Amanda Lambrix, and you may know me as @spillingthebeans_nutrition on Instagram and Facebook. Go ahead, get comfortable, grab a snack, and let's get started spilling the beans. Welcome back. It's our final day of the intuitive eating series, but no worries. We, of course, will still be continuing our conversation on intuitive eating in future episodes. But today we are going to be discussing Principle 10, Gentle Nutrition, with dietitian Megan Miller. Megan is a non-diet registered dietitian nutritionist with her own private practice, which is called Serenity Nutrition Co., based out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Using a weight-inclusive health at every size approach, her practice specializes in PCOS, disordered eating, and eating disorder recovery. Throughout her career, she has watched women struggle with failed diets, obsessive food rules, and poor body image. Her goal is to break the cycle and help women to live the life they deserve. When she's not working, you can find her at a local coffee shop or exploring Indy with her two dogs and husband. And hopefully Megan and I will be meeting soon, which you'll hear us talk about a little bit in the podcast episode. In this episode, we talk about how to know if you're making food choices for health or diet reasons, why knowing the intention behind food choices is so important, misconceptions about nutrition for PCOS, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this episode. All right, today on the podcast, we have Megan Miller. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Yes, and I feel like it's important for listeners to know that we actually live very close in proximity now. Before, we knew each other when I lived back in South Dakota, and now we're both living, I don't know, probably like within 15 minutes of each other, and yet we still haven't met, which is kind of funny.
Yes, I mean, it's a really bad time to move to a new city with COVID, so I feel like meeting people and hanging out is kind of hard.
But it's definitely going to happen, hopefully, in the near future.
Yes, absolutely. We need some coffee dates or some dinner dates soon.
Mm-hmm. There's so many awesome dietitians I'm realizing in the area, and so I'm very excited for the possibilities.
Yes.
So for listeners who don't already know you or follow you on Instagram, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, definitely. So on Instagram, I'm known as Serenity Nutrition Company, and that is the name of my private practice. But I'm originally from the St. Louis area, and then I went to school to be a dietitian at Western Kentucky University, and my family are diehard Hilltopper fans. So we still attend many games, and we're all about it. Like, all of my family went there, so it's a big family thing. And then did my internship back in St. Louis, and then my husband went to school in Indiana, so we ended up in Indiana, and now we're in Indianapolis to stay. So we've been moving a lot lately, so I'm very happy to finally be settled in one area for longer than a year.
Yes, I can definitely relate to that. Sometimes it's fun to move and have those new experiences, but you get to a certain point where it's like, okay, I want to feel at home somewhere.
Yes, and you want to put down roots, and you feel like when you know you're moving, it's hard to want to meet new people or make new friends because you're like, well, I'm going to move in X amount of months. So it's nice to be able to, like you said, there's so many dietitians around here and so many people and places to see. And I'm just glad to maybe put down some roots and actually enjoy some place for a while.
So in your private practice and your experience as a dietitian, what's kind of your area of focus?
So my area of focus is PCOS, or polycystic ovarian syndrome, if you don't know the acronym, and then disordered eating / eating disorder recovery. Those are my two niches, but most people don't know that PCOS and disordered eating kind of go hand in hand. So a lot of the times my clients kind of overlap with what our focus is on. So that's what I like to cover. Of course, I do a little bit of random things here and there, as I'm sure you do. But that's my area of focus that I like to have my ideal client seen.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point about how we don't often think of PCOS and eating disorders being overlapping or intertwined. And it's so much more common. And this is something I've learned in my work with eating disorder clients too, is that there's this prevalence of that. Whereas when I worked in clinical, I feel like we thought of them as two very different things. And I wish I had been informed more on that, because I think it would have helped me with those PCOS clients more. And I would have maybe assessed better and not missed things that I'm sure I had in the past.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, until I started doing this work, honestly, with eating disorders, there's always something else going on too. I feel like a lot of times, you know, in society or in the media, we think someone with an eating disorder just has an eating disorder, and that's hardly the case. So I do really think, yeah, a lot of things overlap that I didn't know either until very recently.
And I think too, when I think back to both my undergrad study, and then I also did grad school and in my internship, you know, we didn't really get a lot of exposure in my particular programs to eating disorders and also PCOS too. If we're talking about that, there was probably like a paragraph in our textbook about that. Yeah. And same for eating disorders. There was maybe like a sentence for each eating disorder, and it was not going into the nuance and depth that both you and I are more familiar with now. And so it's understandable that we wouldn't have learned about these things until later when we dug deeper on our own.
Yeah, it kind of blows my mind, the lack of things we learn in dietetics and nutrition. Mm-hmm. In our internship, it's very helpful, but all the things that I think, if I could redo a curriculum, I would totally add so much more in.
Oh, I know. And you don't realize it until you're working in the field. Like at the time, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to need to know what a number two scoop is. But in reality, I probably don't need to know, or I can look it up if I do need to know.
Yes, that is so funny. Yeah, I feel like my food science class with all of the scoops and measurements, like I use it here and there, but if not, I can look it up. But the things that I want to know about, like better counseling skills, or like you said, eating disorders and how to treat them, and PCOS, those are the things that we miss that I think would actually be practical to use.
So I imagine, like myself, that you probably didn't learn much about intuitive eating or health at every size in your programs, or maybe you did. So tell me, kind of, how did you get introduced to the whole weight inclusive world, and what has that journey looked like for you?
So kind of like you said, I definitely did not learn this in school. And I'm only a few years removed. I've been a dietitian for 3 years. So it wasn't like I went to school, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But yeah, my curriculum did not have intuitive eating or health at every size focus. But so probably my first job was at WIC, and I had a long commute. So I kind of got into the podcast world of listening. You know, sometimes the radio gets old on your drive. Mm-hmm. And I came across the RD Real Talk podcast. And it was about the time that she was doing her first intuitive eating series. And I just started to hear about it through that kind of podcast, and started to do some more reading, join some Facebook group, and then order the book. And then everything just kind of started to like domino effect from there. It all made so much more sense. It just really applied to what I wanted to do. I knew I always wanted to do my own thing and do private practice, but I knew I didn't want to do weight loss or meal plans. And so it kind of all just came together. And the more I learned about it, the more I wanted to know about it, if that makes sense. So I feel like it was really podcasts that helped me with my intuitive eating journey, or at least started it. And then everything kind of went from there.
Oh my gosh, I have so much to thank podcasts for, because I am similar. I had heard about intuitive eating, and I think briefly heard about health at every size from a classmate in grad school. But then I think I had maybe started reading intuitive eating and then put it down. And I think it just intimidated me, the thought of having no food rules. I was like, what? This is not what we learned in school. This cannot be true. But I think when I started hearing from podcasts, I listened to Artie Real Talk with Heather as well, and then Christy Harrison's Food Psych, and those made a lot more sense. And I think hearing of people's stories and the work they've done with clients, I was like, oh, this is actually a whole different world that I had never heard of before, and we were never taught about. And it kind of, like you said, it's almost like once you learn about it, you can't unlearn it, and you just want to keep learning more, which is pretty exciting, but also intimidating too.
Yes, I do feel like when I first learned about it, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but I started, you know, following more people on Instagram that were really into intuitive eating and health at every size. And I almost got information overload. And I think it led to like imposter syndrome really coming out because I was like, well, I don't know nearly enough to even talk about this topic or write about it or help people with it because all these people have been doing it for so long and know all these great things. So I think at first it almost, I learned too much, if that makes sense, because it kind of overwhelmed me, like you said, and kind of intimidated me that I didn't know enough.
Yeah, and I still feel that way sometimes. Sometimes I have to take little breaks from Instagram because I'm like, oh, wait, like I thought I knew quite a bit about intuitive eating and health and every size and this way of teaching about nutrition, but then I'll read something really profound and I'm like, oh, wait, I don't know anything. And then, like you said, that imposter syndrome. So sometimes it's nice to set those healthy boundaries so that we don't get too overwhelmed.
Absolutely. I feel like the best thing I've done for myself is make a separate Instagram. I don't follow a lot of other RDs, and that gives gives me a chance to just like separate work and self. And I feel like that helped a lot with the overwhelming feeling.
Oh, I can definitely echo that. So anyone listening who is thinking about starting a dietitian Instagram account, I know people have differing opinions about having separate accounts, but I do the same thing. I have a separate account. And part of that's because I don't really care to post too much personal stuff like with about family or my friends who aren't in the dietetics world. And I also know that my friends probably don't care a lot about what I'm talking about, if I'm being perfectly honest. And so they don't necessarily want to follow my dietitian account, which I can completely respect. Plus, then I can follow, you know, like if I'm following along with The Bachelor or something, I can have kind of my mindless account that I can follow. And then I also have the dietitian account when I'm feeling up to that as well.
Yes, absolutely. I feel like it has made me a better dietitian to give myself a break from learning so much.
It's kind of practicing what we preach, because I don't know about you, but we talk about boundaries and taking a break from certain areas of our life in my sessions with clients, and I'm learning to do the same for myself as well.
Yes. It's definitely something that I've had to learn, but it's definitely helpful.
So in the continuation, and actually our final episode of my own intuitive eating series, much like Heather's on RD Real Talk, we're talking about honoring your health with gentle nutrition in this episode. So when you think of this principle as a whole, what are some things that come to mind for you?
When I think of intuitive eating and, you know, the mixed messaging that people can get online from it, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just eat whatever you want, you know, stop whenever you're full. There's not a lot more to it. And I think that's where it gets the bad rap, where there's so many more things going on, with gentle nutrition being one of them. And I think something that is key with gentle nutrition is that it is the last principle, that you can't start with worrying about nutrition if you're still in diet culture. So when I was thinking about this episode and I've been rereading the book just to help with other clients, I was just like, it makes so much sense that the nutrition piece is at the end because it can kind of tie everything together. And when I think of nutrition in regards to intuitive eating, it's using your mind knowledge with your body knowledge. I feel like that's where it really comes together, is you finally got into a place where sometimes you have to listen to your mind over what your body is telling you because of how your day is going to go. And I think, or you have a medical condition that you know there are certain foods that maybe will be a positive change with your medical condition, or if you have celiac or a food allergy, there are things that you have to avoid. So I think that's where gentle nutrition comes into place. And I think the way you view it is, what is your mindset behind the reason you're choosing these foods? And I think that's how intuitive eating kind of plays into also using gentle nutrition together.
I think you've summed up a lot of questions that I often get asked, or the assumptions that people have when they see intuitive eating put very simply on Instagram or other social media sites, is that I think because we often use things like donuts, and I definitely do this in my graphics as well, but donuts and cookies, because we're trying to portray that food freedom, and that's often not what you see with our diet culture today, that I think sometimes people get this impression that all you do is eat cookies and burgers and pizza and everything, whereas you brought up a lot of good points about how that's not necessarily the case. And so when you think of gentle nutrition, you mentioned how this can be used in conjunction with if you have like a medical condition, like say celiac disease. So how might that work? And you can use a different example if that wouldn't be easier.
So I'll use PCOS, for example, since I tend to do that a lot with my clients. Is with PCOS, there are simple health interventions that can help manage symptoms. And a lot of times with PCOS, we're just trying to manage the symptoms that come along with PCOS because there is no cure. And so one of those things is managing insulin resistance and balancing blood sugar. And we know that if we incorporate a protein and a fat with our carbohydrate at meals, we can help balance our blood sugar a little better. So instead of thinking, I can never eat X, Y, and Z carb again because it'll raise my blood sugar, we think, okay, if I'm going to have this carb, you know, I'm going to have a bagel for breakfast, which is usually, you know, in diet culture, a banned food. What can I add to my bagel to help balance my blood sugar? So I could eat it with an egg, or I could have it with some peanut butter, or have it with some Greek yogurt with extra protein to help balance blood sugar. So I teach my clients that, again, like, no food is off limit, but what can we do to help manage your symptoms while also letting you eat the foods that you enjoy?
All of those things that you mentioned are so important, because when I think back to when I first started my career as a dietitian and before I was fully aware of a non-diet approach, what we were often taught to do when I would get a referral for a PCOS client, which I think I can only think of about two times where I had a PCOS client, and all of the handouts that we had in our system were all about, first of all, losing weight. That was always the assumption that you needed to lose weight. So it's really refreshing to hear a dietitian like yourself talk about the nutrients and how you can combine foods and still eat those types of foods. And I never once heard you mention anything about having to change the number on the scale.
Yes, absolutely. That's probably one of the things that led me to PCOS more than anything, is that these women do not receive compassionate care, I don't feel like. You know, they get this diagnosis that is a really overwhelming diagnosis for some people, and they're just told, okay, lose weight. And lose weight at all cost. And we know that if you have higher insulin resistance and that's not being managed, losing weight is like going up Mount Everest. I mean, it's a very uphill battle, and these women feel shame and guilt when they can't, or when they gain the weight back, or it leads to an eating disorder. So I feel like until we help them implement strategies of, okay, how can we put our meals and snacks together to help with these symptoms, they're just going to continue down this or continue down this road or go on this hamster wheel of going to the doctor, telling them to lose weight, not losing weight, feeling guilt, you know, and just kind of repeats itself.
Yeah, it's that kind of binge restrict or that whole diet cycle that we often will refer to in the non-diet approach. I think too, you know, thinking back to the PCOS, I always like to talk about more those health promoting behaviors as opposed to the weight loss, because weight's not really something we can control. I mean, I guess you could cut off your arm and you've lost weight, but we can't really feasibly do that. And also, I would like to mention that's not very health promoting behavior to cut off your arm. So please do not. Not recommended. And so it's nice to see looking at these things that we can actually control, but they're also not to the extent that we hear of in diet culture, where it's like, okay, restrict X, Y, and Z from your diet, and that's what you're controlling. It's still under the guise of being able to have all foods and enjoy them to satisfaction.
Yeah, and I think something that kind of I was thinking about is when we're doing gentle nutrition or trying to implement, like you said, these health promoting behaviors, they're not these like crazy, sexy, you know, out of this world ideas. And I think that's what, like, that's kind of what gets people sometimes, is like, I'm not going to tell you to do these complex interventions because they don't work and they're not sustainable. And I'm trying to help you have a more well-rounded lifestyle, not help you in the next, you know, 2 weeks accomplish something. And I think with gentle nutrition, that's the key, is like you said, implementing small behaviors over time that are going to just make either your medical diagnosis improve or help with that or help with symptoms or help you feel better. But it may not be this elaborate plan that you would think of that you would get from a dietitian, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, I think what we often hear of today from whether it's in health professions or, you know, fitness influencers is demonizing certain foods. Mm-hmm. So what I would imagine would often be demonized in a case like PCOS, where there is insulin resistance, is the demonization of sugar. Is that something you often hear from clients or you read about when you're looking for information on PCOS?
100% of the time. every client that I feel like, you know, I think of, or anybody I talk to about PCOS, carbs are like the number one enemy, or sugar is the number one enemy, and you need to eliminate it at all costs. And then if you don't, then you're doing something wrong. And so when I tell them, like, no, the best thing we can do is, you know, eat carbs consistently. And that's kind of where that gentle nutrition comes in. Like, we want to spread your carbs throughout the day to help balance your blood sugar and, you know, add in those healthy fats and add in that protein to keep you full and satisfied. And so those are things that we can implement and add to your diet, rather than, you know, a lot of people with PCOS are told, okay, eliminate gluten and eliminate dairy. But there are very, very few studies, and honestly, they have very small, on very small scales, that have any benefit to eliminating. And of course, if you have something like celiac, then yeah, you want to eliminate gluten. But with PCOS, I feel like that's a lot of people what they're told at the very beginning. And it's like, then it leads to that restriction like we talked about, and then it leads maybe to a binge later on. So yes, I feel like with PCOS especially, there are so many food groups and foods that are demonized that it makes so much sense why women with PCOS are up to 6 times more likely to develop an eating disorder.
Wow, I'd actually never heard that statistic before, but after hearing what you just described, it makes sense, sadly, that that is a highly prevalent problem with people with PCOS.
Yes, it's really, I mean, and it makes sense, like you said, when you tell somebody to not eat, you know, half of the foods in, that are available, then what are we going to do? We're going to want to crave those foods. And then we're probably, and because we've been restricting, our body's going to overcompensate and then overeat those foods. And then we're going to feel all those, you know, shame and guilty feelings. And then it just starts over. So, and it's one thing that's really interesting is I've read studies that when women are told to eliminate dairy, that actually implementing whole fat dairy, because I'm sure we can talk about, you know, the no fat, low fat craze, implementing whole fat dairy can actually help with fertility, which with PCOS, some of the issues are infertility. So I just feel like a lot of the messaging that people get can even be really wrong, and for lack of a better word.
Well, and I think it's a part of it can be too, the limited amount of information that's given at doctor's offices. So in one of my jobs, I worked pretty extensively with people with diabetes, and they often were told at the doctor's office, you know, just don't have white foods. That was probably the one most common thing I heard when I would meet with these clients, which obviously, as you know, is not going to be the answer. Just eliminate white foods. Okay. And so they came to me very confused and also fearful of foods, much like your clients come to you and are fearful of sugar. And so, you know, they're not getting a lot of information that's very helpful to them. And then when they come to us, it's almost like we have to unlearn some of those things and relearn the things that are actually going to be useful to them.
Yes, absolutely. We do a lot of unlearning in sessions, or just a lot of, you know, a lot of teaching that, because I feel like a lot of my clients, and I'm sure yours too, you know, Google what's going on, and they get 10 different responses, you know, to the same question. And so it's kind of like sifting through what's evidence-based or what's actually pertinent to them. Because I think a lot of times too, like even with diabetes, what affects one person is not going to affect another. And I think that especially with PCOS, a lot of women are told like, oh, well, my friend couldn't eat this food, so I can't eat that food. And it's just not the case. And I feel like that can be applied into a big spectrum of, you eat this, you'll look like that, or if you eat this, it'll affect you like that. And it's just really not the case.
And I think, too, the unlearning kind of comes into play when we talk about the previous principles of intuitive eating, such as reject the diet mentality or making peace with food and challenging the food police, and then also learning to become more in tune with your hunger and fullness cues, too, instead of just listening to these ambiguous rules, like I can only have half a cup of something. And so, you know, you're starting to do those things, and then you can start to incorporate that gentle nutrition. So you kind of alluded to this before. So why wouldn't someone want to just start intuitive eating at principle 10? Why wouldn't they want to start with gentle nutrition right off the bat?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, I feel like that's a question that I get a lot, is why aren't we focusing on, you know, the nutrition piece of things? And And when you think about like intuitive eating and the 10 principles as a whole, if you're in diet culture and you have all of these food rules around, you know, like we said, carbs or white foods or what time to eat or when it's okay to snack, then if you have all of those entrenched in your mind and you haven't been able to break away from those, anything we add for nutrition is going to be another food rule for you. It's not going to be because you're listening to your body and trusting your body and honoring its hunger. It's going to be because, okay, I'm allowed to eat this food because my dietitian told me so. So I feel like if we don't break down all those walls and those rules and regulations before we get to nutrition, we're just kind of setting you up to continue down that diet culture cycle.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you haven't done the work to figure out what are your current diet rules and how can I really tell what that intention is behind the new rule that I'm incorporating or the new advice that I'm taking in. Because even though it could be something that we might view as gentle nutrition, if they haven't broken down that mentality that comes with diet culture, then it's likely that it's just going to be another rule to add to their list.
Yes, it's going to be treated, yeah, like you said, just as another thing that they need to do because it's going to lead to this result, rather than they're doing it because health promoting or makes them feel better or all of these other things. And one thing I think is interesting with intuitive eating that sometimes gets mixed message is like, oh, if you crave a salad or if you crave a bowl of fruit, you're doing something wrong, because of course you would never crave anything, you know, like that. And I was talking to a client the other day and I was saying, like, on a really hot day, if you know you're out and about and you are going to stop for lunch, a cheeseburger may not sound very good because it's going to be heavy on your stomach and you're going to be out on this hot day. So maybe a summer salad just like will hit the spot for you. And that doesn't mean that you're doing intuitive eating wrong because you picked a salad. I feel like that's a lot of mixed messaging too, is it's more of, okay, what is my body craving in this moment? What does my body need right now to get me through the afternoon or to help me not feel bogged down? And I feel like that really resonated with her, because she was like kind of in the impression like, well, if I do pick something that is, you know, quote unquote healthy in terms of what society believes, then I'm not really intuitively eating, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of that goes back to when we see very simplified messages about intuitive eating online. And it's not that they're not truthful. Like if we see a message where it's comparing like eating carrot sticks when you're actually craving a donut, and it, you know, I keep using donut, but that seems to be what I often see, or a cheeseburger or whatever. And it's not that you always have to choose that quote unquote less healthy option. You know, it's getting in tune with your body. And it sounds to me like in that instance where a salad maybe sounded better to your client based on the circumstances and what their body needed to feel better in that moment, it sounded like they made the more intuitive choice for them. And so it really does depend so much on the situation that you're in.
Yes, definitely. And it's about like the intention behind what you're doing. And that's kind of another thing why we can't start, you know, with gentle nutrition, because if in that moment, if you had not, you know, done the work and put in the time to dismantle your diet culture thoughts and your food police, you probably would have picked a salad because it was the healthy choice, not because it was the choice that was going to make you feel better that afternoon. And if you would have picked the cheeseburger, it might have been because you just were going to have a cheat day. I'm sure you've heard that before. So I feel like when you're thinking about implementing gentle nutrition, it's all about the reasoning behind what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that lends to the next question I was going to ask you, is how can we tell if we're making changes to our nutrition for diet reasons or health reasons? And I think what you mentioned is the intention behind it. And sometimes we have to go through those first principles before we truly know and understand what our intention is.
Yeah, it's like, it's thinking, you know, in terms of movement, you know, because as the principle, like right before this one, is, are you doing exercise because it's going to lead to burn X amount of calories or to lose X amount of weight? Or would you still do this exercise for the next 6 months if you knew it didn't change your body at all? And so kind of same with in regards to the food and nutrition, if, you know, you can't really see if your blood sugar is balanced, you know, like you're not going to physically see that. You're not going to get a physical response from other people saying like, oh, wow, your blood sugar looks great today. But if you're doing these health promoting behaviors because you know it's going to help balance your blood sugar regardless of anything else, then that's a health promoting behavior. But if you're eating a carb and a protein because you're like, well, it's going to help me lose weight or it's going to help me get to this X goal, then intention behind it is still in diet culture.
One thing I think of is I've had some clients who've started working with me and they'll tell me that they are eating plant-based right now. And at the time they might tell me, you know, this is really how I truly enjoy eating. And I don't necessarily have anything inherently wrong with plant-based, but a particular client I had at one point who was struggling with restrictive eating was very convinced that they were eating plant-based or more vegan type foods because they preferred that and they'd been doing it so long that didn't really mind doing so. But then after, you know, some sessions and some work we had done together, we started to explore that actually there maybe were some diet reasons behind it. So we don't always even know right away until we take time to explore our intentions more what our reasoning is. And sometimes we'll kind of hide that because we're not ready to let go of it either. Maybe you've had experiences like that too.
Yes, absolutely. Like, because a lot of the times when we're working with clients, we're trying to break down and dismantle 20, 30, 40 plus years of diet culture. So you have all these regulations and rules built up in your head that you have had for so many years. So there may be things that are actually a food police rule that you don't even realize because it's just how you've been for your whole adult life. Like one client, I remember she said that she couldn't eat bagels. And I was like, okay, so what about bagels is why you can't eat them? Like, what makes you think that bagels are off limits? And she said, well, I don't know. I don't actually know why. Like, I've never actually thought about why I can't. I just can't. Once you like kind of break down these rules, they're like, well, I don't actually know where they came from. I heard them, I guess, one time, or my mom said them, or my sister or a friend, and they kind of stuck. And it's kind of interesting because people start to slowly realize, I don't have a reason to have this rule.
And another thing that just came up for me too is even if you do have something like PCOS or the other one I keep going back to is celiac disease, where there are some benefits to changing up what you're doing or adding in things or pairing certain foods for the health benefits, or certainly for celiac disease, not eating gluten is going to be helpful for that inflammation. But that doesn't mean that there's not foods within that category that can meet your needs. So for example, if you have celiac disease and you really want a, let's say a cupcake, you can still have a cupcake. And I mean, there's nothing saying you couldn't just have a regular cupcake with the gluten in it, but you could also find the alternative and that might be satisfying for you. But you might be choosing that option without the gluten in it because you know that for your body and for the condition that you do have, you'll feel better overall. Does that make sense? I kind of went on a tangent.
No, yes, definitely. Like, how we talked about, it's the reasoning behind why you're choosing something. It's not necessarily like the act of it. It's just the reasoning behind, okay, why am I choosing a gluten-free cupcake? Am I choosing it because I have celiac and I know it's going to be health promoting down the road? Or am I choosing gluten-free cupcake because I think it's quote unquote healthier and I need to eliminate gluten in my diet because that's what I saw on Instagram?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of is the common theme that I see with the gentle nutrition is asking yourself some questions before you engage in restricting a food or picking a particular type of food is asking yourself, okay, why am I choosing this food? Where did I get that idea that, say, gluten is less healthy than the non-gluten option or whatever the case may be? And maybe asking yourself what actually sounds good if that isn't the case.
Yeah, definitely. And I know like a lot of times people eliminate dairy because they think that is very a health promoting behavior. And maybe you do have lactose intolerance. So maybe not eating a huge bowl of ice cream in the evening is going to make you feel better and you're not going to be as bloated or have, you know, as much issues in the evening. But if you wanted a small thing of ice cream and you're like, it's okay, I'm going to be a little bloated, it's fine, then you can have the ice cream. So I feel like you take it for what it is and you adapt to what you need it to be for you with good intentions behind it.
that's a good example with the lactose intolerance is that, yeah, sure, you can have something with dairy in it and you can kind of outweigh the cost versus the benefit of having it. And maybe you do have a little bit of it and you do have a stomach ache and you've made peace with that and that's okay. And you maybe won't have it in the future. Or maybe you didn't mind the stomach pain or whatever afterwards and you're okay with that. But overall, you've really had a moment to explore your intention and reasoning behind it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, again, that's just like the main point of the principle 10 is just like, what are your intentions behind it?
Before I let you go, can you tell listeners, you know, where they can find you? If you have any cool projects going on, feel free to give yourself a plug here.
Yeah, you can find me at Serenity Nutrition Co. on Instagram and then serenitynutritionco.com. I do have a free PCOS handout if you subscribe to my mailing list. So if that's something that you're interested in, they can definitely find that on the website. And I'm taking new clients. So if you've listened to this episode and you have PCOS or you think you may or you just want some more direction in that regard, then I'm totally open to working with you and helping with whatever I can. That's where you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. And we definitely need to meet up sometime soon.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in and thank you to Anchor for again hosting my podcast. Be sure to download and subscribe this podcast on Apple or your favorite streaming device. If you're looking for ways to get started on your own journey towards food freedom, head over to my website at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/course to get started on my self-paced course. If you need more individualized help, I also offer virtual coaching and you can get in touch with me at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/virtual-coaching. To get show notes from this episode, you can go to spillingthebeansnutrition.com/podcast. And of course, if you're not already following me on Instagram or Facebook, I'm at spillingthebeans_nutrition. Our album art was photographed by my very own little cousin, Brittany Preller, and our theme song was written by Daniel James O'Connor and is used under the Creative Commons license.